Welcome to Beyond Perception. I'm Simon, and my guest today is Jeroen Venenbos. Welcome, Jeroen.
Thank you so much, Simon. It's wonderful to be here with you today.
Likewise, and just to introduce you briefly to our audience. So you have been on a lifelong quest for truth and led you through the depths of Zen, Taoism, Advaita Vedanta, Trika Shaivism, culminating in a transformative mentorship with John Prendergast and Timothy Conway, both past guests on this podcast. And that's also how we got to know each other. You have a foundation in music therapy and Hakumi. You integrate Eastern mystical teachings as well as Western psychological healing modalities. And so you're offering a unique approach to spiritual counseling and somatic coaching, really guiding individuals on their own paths to inner awakening. And it's really great to have you here. So Timothy, past guest, shared a friend introduced me to you. And over the, I think, 1 or 2 past years, we had a couple of conversations. We got to know each other. And you shared with me that the question, what is most essential, has been with you for very long. And maybe that might be an opener to our conversation today. What answers did you find to this question of what is most essential?
Well, that's a very deep and profound one. And it's a question that somehow has been with me, you know, as long as I can remember. Actually, I don't know. I think I have to go back to the age when I was something about 7 years old, where I had this curiosity, like, what is it that is actually conscious here? And I took my name and actually was wondering who is actually responding to the name Jeroen. And I remember that I was lying in bed at one summer evening, and I couldn't sleep. And I took this question with me, like, who is responding to Jeroen? And I kept, you know, intuitively, I kept repeating the name, and there was nothing to be found behind it. And I stayed with it. I clearly can remember this. And at one point, the name dissolved, and there was just this pure openness, that which is aware of all. And so the foundational consciousness of who I was, that was a remarkable early discovery. And yet it was one of the most natural ways that I could relate to, as being myself. So this was very early on, and naturally, you know, due to familial conditioning, there is, you know, the so-called forgetfulness, that we, you know, we lose that clarity, or that I would say innocence of just really being open to this natural understanding of who we are. You know, and of course, you know, I didn't have any words for it or frames. It was just a very innocent discovery again. Due to challenges within the family, I felt over time in a depression where, deep layers of grief came up, and especially related to the relationship or with my dad, or the lack thereof, actually. So there was this this deep challenging path of going through these, you know, emotional layers And you forget yourself in that sense, in the sense of what is most essential. Luckily, I had the chance to the opportunity to work with a therapist pretty early on, and he guided me over the many years through this inner process. And I would say, at the age of 16, I consciously reconnected with that initial discovery.
Wow.
And it was actually through a book that one of my best friends gave me, and it was about non-dual spirituality in all its facets. Remarkable work by a Dutch psychiatrist who had deep experiences in India. And I felt like I was reading my own biography in a sense. And that put me back on the path, like, I know this, I remember this. So I picked up a meditation practice, and sat for many hours, and had my first deep contemplative experiences with that. And it was 19 where that really, culminated into a deep, profound awakening where I didn't know what was really going on. And so my mentor at the time, therapist, he pointed out that, well, since you have an affinity with Zen Buddhism, you might find a group or a sangha to practice and to deepen this experience and integrate it more into your life. And so I did. I was 19 at the time, still very challenged by emotional, I would say, still lingering depression. The psychosomatic level, I had to deal with fatigue. So I had not much energy. And that was linked to the deep question, well, what is actually the purpose here? What is my path? What is the meaning of life? I did my college, but now what? Right? So that threw me back to that essential question. What is really essential here? And I found that within the Zen Buddhist context, where I felt immediately at home. Something, really felt at home and it felt like familiar, like the soul knew what this was about. So, when the sutras were chanted, I picked up the book and just sang along as it was something very natural to me. And, naturally in Zen, you dive into silence with each other and really go to the depth of your own being to discover what is your true nature or Buddha nature. Going deep, doing many, many retreats within that context, I regained my energy and also my sense of direction in life. I felt like this is my path. I want to fully live this, make this my own path. So I felt like it was the most natural thing for me to become a Zen monk. And so, I was studying music therapy first, and then at one point when I graduated, it felt like the next natural step. And for 2 years, I was a Zen novice outside of the Sangha. And then I lived for a while within the Sangha as a resident, where I encountered a whole different side of of the community. And so I discovered, different types of abuse, actually. So I felt like this I cannot support, or I cannot live within that context. So I always say, the Dharma put me in that context, and the Dharma also pulled me out of it. So there was, this intuition, this knowing that this is not it as well. Then I got really the chance. I saw the deeper meaning of it much later on, where I felt like, ah, life pulled me, out of it, so that I can really open up to the formless tradition, of non-duality, where it is much more open and free. And subsequently, I developed, beautiful, deep spiritual friendships, and as a me as a mentee, with both Timothy Conway and John Prendergast, and that was, like coming at home spiritually, in relationship, I would say. I was still looking for this connection, like what is it like to not only practice this for oneself and live from this understanding to the best of one's abilities, but also to share this with a like-minded, like-hearted friend, or multiple friends. And so, yeah, the guidance of John and Timothy are invaluable, and they actually they both very naturally pointed me back to my own inner authority. And so what is left is, actually a beautiful friendship in a deep resonance, for this this understanding of who we are. So that is a brief just a brief reflection on my path. And I would say, generally, it feels important to acknowledge that we all strive for lasting happiness and peace, knowingly or unknowingly. No, but it just in my case as well, like due to conditioning and the beliefs we hold about ourselves and the world, we suffer. And this very suffering can be actually the great catalyst to get in touch with what is true and essential. It's actually the soul calling itself home, or true nature calling itself home. And I would say it's not only suffering that is the catalyst. I would also say that, there is the ripeness and readiness for the soul to naturally connect with what is most essential. And so there is a deep yearning, longing for knowing what is true and what is actually true, right? That's the question. What did I not discover, and is still an unfolding process for me and for others, for you yourself too. Right. It's a deep question, and it's the actual dive within to connect with these perennial self-inquiry questions, like who am I? What is the nature, true nature of myself, of you, of reality, right? And as we connect with these questions, we see through the layers of our conditioning and sense of separate self, and actually have the chance to recognize and reconnect with the unconditioned universal source nature that we are. which is non-conceptual. It's not of the mind. It's not an object, but the very subject that we are. And a beautiful pointer I find is, it's a knowing by being. Also a beautiful potent pointer I find is, it's actually pure awareness being aware of itself. We heard that maybe before, from teachers or from what we read. But it's a profound discovery. And wisdom traditions, call this by many names, right? Depending on the context. I call it presence, awareness, beingness. I use these words interchangeably. And I also like to call it unconditional love. And one caveat here, we don't want to hang on to certain pointers, we don't want to reify it as the next something, because ultimately, these are all names for the nameless. We try to identify that which is actually unidentifiable. That's the paradox. But there's beauty in it, in these pointers. But at the same time, we don't want to focus on the finger that is pointing at the moon, right? We actually want to look at the moon, experience that directly, and not focus on the finger itself.
Thank you very much for sharing your experience with us. And you mentioned before that you had this question, what's the purpose of life? What's the meaning of it? And then you also shared that there was the sense of having arrived or being at home. If I may ask you, is there a purpose of life? Did you find a conceptual answer to this?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, it's a question of the mind, right? It tries to find meaning. But ultimately, I would say that if we can talk about the meaning of this, it's discovering that we are really at home and one with the one reality that we are. The markers here are, inner contentment and peace. Being connected with a profound sense of love for oneself and for everything and everyone. It's not a personal love even. It's I well, That's why I named it unconditional love. When we are in touch with that, everything is just perfect as it is, because it's welcome within that. And it's actually, Simon, an expression of it. That's what I wanted to add, that to this discovery, what we call so-called non-duality, it comes full circle when we're not just discovering what we are essentially not, it's what we essentially are. It's coming to full fruition when we appreciate that essentially all manifestations are an expression of our true nature, of our unity self.
And
So now, as the Chandogya Upanishad states, now all is verily Brahman, all is God, all is the divine reality. So all, nothing excluded.
if I
And so,
hold on.
yeah, excuse me. So just to finish the sentence, and then so it's not just resting back in awareness, but also as awareness or presence. Now we recognize that, this body here, this so-called body over there. it's a seamless, manifestation of one shared essence nature. And this comes with a profound sense of being at ease with what is, and a sense of homecoming.
That makes a lot of sense. And when I look back my own journey, so I made out of what you shared, the purpose is to get somewhere, to have a specific experience. And when I have this experience, and when I'm in this experience, I achieved the purpose of my existence, and it led to a chase of specific experiences. So it led to a conditional life experience again. And there was this moment of realization that that might be a pointer, but it's not it.
No. No, and these experiences can be actually great pointers on the way. These experiences are made to be made to see what it is like to actually to see the vastness and the multidimensionality of what we actually are, right? There are different states, but whatever they are, they come and go. Even the thought-free states, the so-called samadhi states, they are, absolutely valuable to dive into. And yet there it's not sustainable to stay there, because at one point, you stand up from the meditation cushion and, a thought comes in again. And so, the question is what is actually holding, both the thought-free and the thought-free state and thoughts? And so, on the one hand, no, sorry, let me rephrase that. It's really not an object. And very subtly, we make it into an object, make it into something to achieve, something as a goal. And that is very much part of the progressive paths, where we have certain ideals we want to, cultivate and, practice. And we're on the path, so to speak. We're on our way towards the goal. But the direct path, what I'm talking about, is goes directly to that recognition of what we are in a very direct way. So what in Chan or Zen is called direct sudden awakening, that is one aspect of awakening. And at the same time, there is also a so-called gradual cultivation process going on, where we want to embody its dharmic qualities or virtues, that come forth from this understanding. And these may encompass loving kindness, compassion, equanimity, patience, empathy, gratitude. And so these are, qualities in them, in and of themselves. It's not the goal to get there. It's the natural result of this recognition. I hope that makes sense.
It makes absolutely sense, yeah. And it's just interesting to reflect on my own experience again, how this little rational apparatus I have within my human makeup is continuously attempting at conceptualizing my experience. And for example, taking qualities, as you mentioned, kindness, empathy, or gratitude, and repackaging it into something
Exactly.
I should do.
Exactly.
And then I'm, and that's my own way of experiencing it. When that happens, it takes me out of reality or the present moment and out of freedom into an obligated way of acting in the world. And it becomes conditional. So what I came to realize in myself, I'm not doing it for the sake of it, but to get something in return.
As a transactional
thing, like a return on investment strategy. To get some praise, acknowledgement, validation, like a pat on the shoulder.
That's a very honest reflection. And, you know, before we know it, we approach it like that, you know? Myself included. You know, I name all these beautiful words, but when, you know, that is basically fueled by, or the mind is, you know, driving this, as you said, to try to get it, you know, to arrive at these, you know, qualities or states or whatever. We're on a project that never ends. You know, it's the seeking energy that remains to be active in the process, and that's why it's so important, you know, to connect with that, you know, with these essential questions like who am I, or to really spontaneously recede back into what we are as beingness right here, right now, in a very simple, direct way, and forget all of these names and qualities. You know, they come, you know, they become alive, you know, by themselves, as a natural result. That's my experience.
You used the term awakening, and I've heard it so often in so many different modalities or contexts, and you spoke of a direct awakening and a gradual awakening. And I think that's something John Prendergast, one of your mentors, used to describe the process of awakening, and I found it intuitively sense-making. He said something along the lines of, at first, it's a waking up from identification with your identity or the experience itself. And then it's a awakening down into your experience. So that also might be part of you. And that's just my take on it. I would love to...
Oh, absolutely. I can totally relate to that. Yeah.
Think about
it. Another way of saying it is, you know, there is a process of orientation, you know, where we attune to this understanding more and more through practice, through what we read, or, you know, just by spontaneous direct experience. And then there is a so-called acclimation process where we more and more see the implications of the understanding, and so we attune with it gradually more and more, and then, you know, that's maybe also part of the waking down, is, you know, integrated in to our daily lives, you know, and let it in more into the body. Basically, integrate this understanding in all areas of our lives to the best of our abilities.
And maybe I can share it with a more drastic word. So one of my realizations was, and that was, you could say, what my mind made of it. Fuck, this is all an illusion. And you could say the second conclusion was, there's only illusion. This is part of my experience, so I can also embrace it. And that might not be a very, you could say, neutral or objective way to point it out, but like, how does that relate to like this waking up and waking down to the question of what is true?
Now, so waking up is more like this waking up to our transcendent nature. Now, what we formlessly are. Now we disidentify from what we are not. Now we see, as you say, it's all an illusion. Illusion in the sense that we take it to things to be as something that has an inherent existence of their own. But as the Buddha also taught, everything is in flux. Everything is impermanent. And so in that sense, it's illusory, no? It's like a dream. Nothing is substantial as of objects. So that is one realization, but the next step would be, not just disidentifying from that and discovering what is underneath all of this, as our true nature.
And I
It's
just
also re-identification with what we truly are, but also in an as form, that the illusion, the sense of illusion goes, but the realm of phenomena remains, right? In Vedanta, it says, the ignorance goes, but the illusion remains. So not in the sense that the world of phenomena remains to exist, but without our ignorance of it, what we think it is, no? And so even that concept of being it an illusion also goes when we really appreciate it as all manifestations of the one awareness, no? That there is no gap between what is aware and what is manifested within awareness and as awareness, essentially.
When you speak of having the realization or coming back to your true nature and the realization of nothing has an inherent existence in itself, is that the absolute truth?
Tricky question, Simon. Before we know it, we try to settle on that. There's a teaching in Zen, that of the non-dwelling mind, to not stay, to fixate the mind on anything. Well, is that it? Well, it's part of the realization, I would say. But there's a whole way of exploring the richness of this miracle that we experience. So very to very briefly touch upon what you also explored with Timothy, is the three domains of existence. So one is the relative pragmatic level, that of the polar opposites, no? Of right and wrong, of helpful, harmful, wholesome, unwholesome. This we daily experience, right? Then there is a so-called intermediate domain where there is the realization that whatever happens is destined to happen. Otherwise, something else would have happened, according to divine will, if you will. And so this is the domain of the universal life force, or the soul, depending on what your focus is on. And then there is the so-called absolute level, where truly nothing is happening. There's only pure consciousness. And so I name these briefly because all three are simultaneously true all the time, or beyond time, and so to fix one's mind on just one level of understanding is to miss out on the utter richness and profundity of our existence.
And so how does these three simultaneously existing perspectives, or how does the understanding or integration of that connect with the w awakening process? I would imagine that can be very confusing also, depending on one's own conditioning or having experiences which are very different to your own conditioning, and then somehow aligning that or integrating these different experiences of existing beyond the personal idea of oneself.
Well, I would say, the inner journey is so unique for everyone. The way we connect to certain practices, teachings, teachers very much depend on our, I would call it spiritual temperament, and also karmic connections. So, for one, it's a real spontaneous receding back into this presence, just out of the blue. It just happens, right? Without any knowledge. Again, I would say not the true nature is ready to call itself back home through that person. And for others, it's like picking up a long time practice, and stick to that. And it's even the case that it's, because the path is non-linear, it's both and, there can be, these sudden awakenings, and then, that sense of cultivating some practices.
And also to go back to what you shared, reflecting on your own experience, you had these openings, but then also you shared you had some kind of traumatic experience or conditioning kind of being part of your journey. And can one separate spirituality from conditioning? Like, does this go together? How do you work with your clients when you guide them on the process of awakening?
Excellent, excellent question. I would affirm that there is spiritual and psychological work are non-separate. And so, the work I offer, I call it the presence-based approach. And this is coming from the direct approach, where we take the recognition of our true nature as the very foundation of our self-exploration. So first, to the best of our abilities, we recede back into presence. We connect from a sense of beingness that we share in our meetings. And from this inherent sense of wholeness, we meet the layers of experience that are not yet in alignment with that. And so, this is an interesting question because, we don't want to bypass our shadow aspects. We actually, in this approach, want to turn towards experience. Instead of just merely transcending it, you know, what we often find in spiritual circles, we want to become intimate with experience, which is more of a tantric approach, you know, when we use some spiritual language. And so now we want to bring in that, you know, our divinity into our humanity. And so in my work with clients, first and foremost, we tap into that sense of presence if that is available. And most of the time, you know, clients that come to me are very much attuned to that already. And if not, you know, I can guide them to that, to a sense of that. And again, it's very simple, you know, just being open and present. Well, easily said than done, maybe, you know, because whatever shows itself, you know, in our moment-to-moment experience is maybe actually very ambivalent about that. So the most important thing is to create a safe space where we actually let our present moment experience be as it is, unfold as it wants to. So it's actually an art of being with what is. And we come from, ideally, we come from a sense of non-judgmental listening and unconditional regard for all of our parts, whatever shows itself. And so we can get in touch with bodily sensations, thoughts, images, feelings, memories, energetic phenomena. And depending on what is just naturally here in our experience, we can work with somatic symptoms, with energetic blockages, or core beliefs. And in that sense, now we don't so much go with the mind to it, talk about it like in, you know, cognitive therapy or psychoanalysis. We actually want to create a conscious cooperation with the unconscious, where we really listen to what is coming up spontaneously from, yeah, from what we bring into the moment. And sometimes we don't know what it is. We have maybe a felt sense of it. And then we want to, you know, get to know that better. Sometimes, you know, people come with, or a client comes with a certain story. And, you know, there is a certain theme around that. And we can investigate, well, is there actually a belief, a limiting belief around this? Sometimes there is. That's the case. You know, we can inquire, okay, what would that belief be? And very often it's something that is really stated in very simple, direct words, like, I'm not good enough, I'm flawed, something is terribly wrong, the world is not safe. And we can actually get in touch with that very place where it comes from. Very often it's like a it's coming from a child part within us that is still believing this, even in our adult lives, that is still convinced I'm not good enough, or life is an unsafe place. And this is a whole subject we can go into, but not in brief, we can really meet that part in us and see what it actually needs. And, you know, from a safe space and our, you know, unconditional regard for it, our presence, we give it. things may, over time, may slowly melt and open up. I also want to add, you know, that it's not only stories we work with, of course. It's often like, hey, I feel something here in the body, and I don't know really what it is, but it feels like, you know, something tight, something constricted. And so we may go to that contraction, and again, we can see, is there a core belief here? But if not, we can just sit with it and let our, you know, light of presence shine on that. And for example, sense into it and see what is at the very core of this, at the center. And you know, this whole process is not so much about you know, working with it with the mind, but really what comes up in the process of really listening to what is unfolding as we are with it. And so in this way, everything is the gateway. Everything is the practice. Whatever sensation there is, whatever thought that may come up or a memory, you know, we can really connect with it and go to the essence of it, what is really, at the core of that experience.
That makes a lot of sense, and it also connects to this waking up. So what you shared, it's kind of at first it's connecting with presence, the divinity, like the truth. And then waking down. And you said something along the lines of bringing divinity into the humanness,
Humanity, yeah, in our
humanity.
humanity.
Yes. Yeah. And it also seems that it is really just about becoming aware. So there's no intention to change something, but to explore and see it for what it actually is.
Exactly.
And
Yeah,
also really.
really honestly be with what is, you know, and often in the most vulnerable way, you know, that we normally are not ready to, you know, in our daily lives. You know, we shield ourselves, you know, we need to survive, or at least we think so. And we forget what it is like to, you know, tune in back into our vulnerability and sensitivity, and to really be with whatever is there, however light or whatever dark it is.
Which really highlights the unconditionality to the experience.
So for me, that unconditional regard or unconditional love is not an abstraction. It's really coming from that place with utmost sincerity.
Yeah, you mentioned spiritual bypassing and a tendency I became aware of myself is to use this idea of transcendence, or that's just relatively true. And I concluded that if it's not relatively true, like I just hold myself conceptually in a detachment to the experience. I'm not sure if I really described it in a way which what I want to say, but I use this idea of relative truth as a means to dissociate to like from the actual experience, to use this idea of this is the truth, this is just relatively true. I don't need to bother too much about it, and I use it as an as a means to dissociate from the actual experience. And being conditional to my experience. That's
Right. And this very resistance let us remain in duality. Now, this I want, but this not. Right? This is true, but this not. It's very tricky.
Yes, but then you also pointed out that there are these, you could say conceptually, three different levels of experience. There's this plane of choice making, of good and right, of possibly,
Right.
that's my question to you, having intentions of doing things, of maybe using one's free will to that extent. And how do you integrate that in a way that makes it so that there, like on this plane, there seems to be a conditionality.
Yes, there is. It's actually, to my experience, a very intuitive dance where sometimes it's appropriate, to really engage on a relative level, right? And to stand up for what is right and, to speak out when something is wrong. That's the most natural thing to do. Otherwise, when we are on the absolute level, not giving a damn, that's also full dissociation, I would say. So it's about the appropriateness of the moment, I would say. And here it is very important to come from deep listening, like what feels like intuitively right and most natural to connect to. And Srinivasagadatta Maharaj, said it beautifully in that famous quote of his, "Wisdom tells me I'm nothing. Love says I'm everything. My life between flows between the two." I find it so true and so beautiful. And it's like that flow. Like sometimes it's this, sometimes that. Sometimes I find myself on a meditation cushion. Sometimes I find myself really engaged, talking to a wonderful friend, or to a stranger. And give myself fully to that. This is also an important thing, I think, to give oneself so fully to the moment, the present moment of what is, and to just know what is most natural and right. That makes sense.
It makes absolutely sense. And you pointed to that just now, this deep listening. And you also, if I recall that right, used the words of inner knowing or intuition. Do you have some words you can share about this? How to differentiate it from maybe conditioning or the mind?
Good question. Well, again, this would be good to to step back from excuse me, the content of the mind first, to in a way disidentify and recede back and get back to that inherent sense of just pure being, of being present, being aware. And not so much defined by anything, where there's not so much conceptualization. And from that, when we open up and become more silent, more open to the moment, we can listen more intuitively to what comes as an impulse, as a felt sense. We become more and more sensitive to these arisings within our own experience that are not so much of the conditioned mind, but very much from a deeper place within, I would say.
And how important that are, what role does letting go of control play in this awakening process? Do we have control? What, to what
Yeah, that's a
extent do
wonderful
we
question.
have control?
Love to get into that with you. The conditioned mind, the personal sense of self wants to, loves to stay in control, or is also conditioned to stay in control, even if it doesn't want to. And yet, I want to refer back to that intermediate level of whatever is happening is destined to happen. That is the domain of the universal life force, where there's something greater at play. Are we in control of our heartbeat or our digestion of food? Are we in control of what we think, or how, what kind of senses we have, or what kinds of bodies we have? This is given. This is governed by something greater. And so this is, with looking at from that vantage point, it's a great invitation to see that no, we're not in control. Life is flowing through us, and we think we are the doer. But actually, the doer is the greater power. I would call it life force, or vital power. It's also called chi or shakti, depending on the tradition. And so when we become more and more sensitive to listening to that, we are so much relieved from our duty that we, need to stay on that perpetual, in that perpetual seeking mode, or not what John Bernanke calls the self-improvement project. We can let go of that. In that sense, so it's a total medicine, I would say, that we think, we need to be in charge of everything, or we choose everything, right? Of course, the way we resonate with things and with reality, also let us attract certain things, right? In a way, there is a way that we, as the Buddha also said, you create your own reality, by the way you perceive it through a certain filter or lens. But when we zoom out and we see that there's actually, all around us, within us, through us, there's this greater power at play. This is where we can surrender to and actually feel held. And this is very much lived in the bhakti traditions, where there's a deeply devotional aspect to life, which, in many non-dual circles and also in different psychological modalities, isn't so much stressed, if at all.
So, could you say conceptually there is a free will to align my perception with this life force, to give myself free to express this life force?
It's a very big question. I would say from the perspective of the separate self, the personal self, we think we have free will. But from the perspective of the life force, there isn't so much, right? And but what I find really important to ponder on is, when we are really coming home, and is there free will to it? Coming back home to our unity self, our true nature. From there, we connect with compassion, right? With that unconditional love. I would say from there we feel the most genuine sense of free will. From there we engage in the most truest sense with ourselves in the world. So it's a complex one, and I think we can talk a whole hour about this. But it's an interesting one. But it's very helpful to to connect with that vital power and see, okay, what is actually doing.
One of the of many beautiful things you shared is that everything is a gateway, a portal. So that would imply that experiencing my conditioning can be a portal to experiencing me beyond conditioning. Non-conditioning can be a portal to get to meet my conditioning.
Exactly. Beautifully stated. Yeah, that's my experience too.
That leaves one speechless. If you want to make the leap from the limited concept of you to who you truly are and create a life in human form that reflects what you truly care about, then join my workshop, The Art of Creating, link in the description, where we not only dive deep into recognizing your true nature, but also connecting with your heart to develop a vision of what you truly love and share the mechanics of the creative process to make that your reality. And the result? Recognizing that you are a creative life force and you being empowered to live your soul's purpose, to be as you are. And that's not a function of changing circumstances, more healing, outside help, but just becoming aware of what's true and what's not.
Yes. This is such an utter miracle, that this is, to be experienced at all, right? In this manner, right? It's literally mind-blowing. And so, like you said, now there is, on the one hand, there is conditioning. There is so much ignorance, suffering, and darkness. And at the, on the other hand, there is so much wisdom, love, and beauty. And to be with that fully, as the holding space of it, I would say that's where it's at. And to have the courage to fully be with these apparently polar opposites.
I know you know this quote, and when we had our conversation, I think we also referred to this quote, and I would just love to share it with our audience. It's a quote from Ramana Maharshi, and he said, "Truly, there is no cause for you to be miserable and unhappy. You yourself impose limitations on your true nature of infinite being, and then weep that you are not, that you are but a finite creature. And then you take up this or that spiritual practice to transcend the non-existent limitations." But if your spiritual practice itself assumes the existence of the limitations, how can it help to transcend them? And when I read that and when I listen to what you shared before, that picks up on that quote. You said the first thing I do with my clients is to come back to presence, to connect with that inherent, I'm not sure if you would agree with that word, wholeness, that connectedness Absolutely. To everything there is. And from there, you can meet your limitation in that sense.
It's a beautiful paradox.
Jeroen, this is such a beautiful conversation, and we're a little bit beyond what we agreed as a time to speak together. Is there something you want to share to complete our conversation? Do you think our conversation is complete at that point? What I also want to mention, we will link to the website, and maybe that would be maybe interesting to just share a little bit about what you do, and if someone is interested, how they can reach out to you and what you do.
Well, on my website, you can find my online offerings as a counselor. I do one-on-one sessions with clients that are genuinely interested in waking up to to their experience, and it can encompass, working through personal conditioning, and also to, the implications of what it is like to really wake up to our true nature, and how to, combine that as a seamless process. And so I'm also open for online group meetings, where I want to go into, certain topics over multiple multiple meetings, and there's so much to talk about and to share when we really embrace the multidimensionality of our own beingness. So, I could talk with you, also with you, about the richness of and the importance of working with the energy centers, working on the soul level, with archetypes. These are vast topics, and that I myself study and deepen for myself, but also want to share and implement in my own counseling. So on the website you can see the outline, what what the presence based approach is about, and what you can expect with working with me. So thank you for mentioning.
Wonderful. So we will link to your website in the description. So go check it out.
Thank you, Simon.
Jeroen, thank you so much. That was really a wonderful conversation.
Really enjoyed it. And really appreciated how you're so attuned to this understanding, and doing all these different interviews, and including with my own friends and mentors. It's a great service what you do, and deeply appreciate you.
Thank you very much. It is my true joy. Well done.
All right. Well,
now I wish you all the best for the future. I look forward to connecting again.
Yes, me too, Simon. Absolutely. All my best to you and Brenda and the dogs.
Yeah.
And may we all be held by this unconditional love of all oneness that we are.
Nothing to add but to thank our audience and listeners for being here with us. Stay or be true to yourself, and I look forward to see you next time again. Much love.